It's time to talk UK sports with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. This is the Leach Report Radio Network. Join in the discussion by tweeting your questions to at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com. And you can call 877-904-1080. Now, along with an outstanding lineup of guests and broadcast to the most passionate fan base in America, the Big Blue Nation, here's the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach.
Hello from Columbia, Missouri, where there is snow on the ground when we landed last night, and I guess there'll be snow on the ground in Kentucky before long. Welcome in to our show, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington here in Mizzou, where the Cats play the Missouri Tigers tonight, and we'll have the call on the UK Sports Network, late one. Three straight late Tuesday games coming up to finish the regular season for Kentucky. The next one's at home against Arkansas, and then the final Tuesday of the regular season, they're down at Ole Miss. So these are games that are a little bit tricky, I think, from a coach's standpoint, just because guys are they get in here last night, so they've got the whole day to kill. Now, they'll let them sleep late, and then they'll get them to practice, and they'll have meetings and so forth. But it is something that I think the really late games and the really early games you're not a fan of as a coach, just because you've either got to keep them engaged for a long day or try to get them going for an early day. But got to roll with the punches. You're going to get those, especially the late ones, I think, when you get into the NCAA tournament. We will talk about Kentucky basketball, a little bit about this matchup. I don't know if there's a whole lot of buzz for the matchup with Missouri, which is 12-12 and 3-9 in the league, but we'll talk about it with Tom Hart, a Missouri grad who won't be working the game tonight. He's elsewhere, but hopefully he'll be back on a Kentucky call soon. But Tom Hart from the SEC Network and ESPN, Larry Vaught, and Evan Daniels from 24/7 Sports. We'll talk a little recruiting with him. I know a couple of you got recruiting questions yesterday that we'll pass along to Evan. That's our guest lineup, presented by Sleep Outfitters, where they have extended their big President's Day sale. Let's get to the Wildcat news of the day. A service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Opportunities or Financial Services. It's a TCB opportunity for the Wildcats, taking care of business. They are a big favorite to win here, and there's really no reason that they should lose. But really the most impressive result on Missouri's worksheet is a loss. They took LSU to overtime here in Columbia a few weeks back, lost 86-80, but they led by 14 with two and change to play. It was an incredible comeback by LSU to get it to overtime. But the fact that they were up 14 on a really good LSU team not too long ago is probably the most impressive thing, as I said, on the worksheet for Missouri. Mizzou tends to turn it over a lot, last in the SEC, according to KenPom.com, in terms of the percentage of possessions in which they turn it over, about 23% of the time. Jordan Geist playing really well for them. He has six games with 20 or more points this season, including the last one. Got 23 against Ole Miss. He's played pretty well against all the better teams that they have played on their schedule. Scored double figures against all four games against ranked opponents. So, again, for Kentucky, it's a matter of being focused, coming in, taking care of business. Don't let them get confident early. Jump on them from the start. And I say that, you know, there's going to be, you know, when Kentucky comes in, they're probably going to have a little better crowd than they've been used to having. Doubt it'll be full with the season Missouri's having, but still it'll be a better crowd than they're used to having. And so doesn't mean that they have to, you know, score the first 10 points over at Kentucky, but it's like you withstand the early challenge. By halftime, you have control of the game, and you just put them away and don't let them think they can win in the second half. And that's the challenge for Kentucky. Wildcats up a notch to number four in the AP and the coaches' polls yesterday. I was a little surprised. I thought they'd probably stay at five, but they went up to four. Tennessee dropped below them. In the NCAA net rankings, Duke moved past Gonzaga to number one in that particular ranking. The Zags are two, Virginia State at three. Houston and Kentucky both moved up to four and five, respectively. And Tennessee dropped two spots to six. So Kentucky is now in the top five of the net rankings. I think if Kentucky wins out, I think they'll be a one seed and probably in Louisville. because Virginia will, I think, lose somewhere along the way. You know, if Virginia were to win out, including the ACC tournament, maybe they could, you know, and Kentucky were to win out, Virginia might get it above Kentucky. But I think Virginia will probably lose at least one. And if Kentucky wins out, I think they'll get the one in the South and get the opportunity to maybe play at the Yum Center. But anything less than that, say if they lose at Tennessee, then I don't. They could still get a one with a loss at Tennessee, but they would need some help elsewhere, I think, if I think that might put the Vols back ahead of them for the one in the South if they end up splitting with Tennessee. And I don't know. I know it could come down. People have floated the scenario to the SEC tournament, and if Kentucky and Tennessee meet, and that actually, with the way it's looking now, could happen in the semifinals. So there's just a lot to play. It's fun to speculate, but there's just a lot that could play out between now and then. Tennessee's got to go to LSU on Saturday, so that's an important game. P.J. Washington wins SEC Player of the Week honors. And the other piece of news is that E.J. Price has reportedly left the U.K. football team to, quote, pursue other opportunities. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. We'll talk with Tom Hart when we come right back. It's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Find out more about the voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
Welcome back into the Leach Report, and we go to the Kentucky Branded Hotline to bring on Tom Hart from ESPN, the SEC Network. Unfortunately, won't be working the Kentucky game. He's got South Carolina and Ole Miss coming up tonight, but I know you've worked the Missouri game before and familiar with Mizzou. In fact, you were telling me, we'll start with this. They're honoring a player at the game between Kentucky and Missouri that was one of your faves.
Yeah, Derek Chivas wore number 3 for Missouri. He was known as an enigmatic player under Norm Stewart, wore a Band-Aid every game. And I was such a big fan that I went out for a game in seventh grade with a Band-Aid on my forehead for no really good reason. And I wasn't the only kid in mid-Missouri that did such a thing. So he was a great player, and his number being the Raptors, along with the likes of John Sunvold and Steve Stepanovich. Missouri's been kind of stingy over the years with retiring their numbers. I think this is probably only the 5th. But also keep in mind, and I say this as a graduate of the University of Missouri, they don't have any national championships, and they've never been to a Final Four. So I think it's all relative.
How have the Missouri fans handled or liked the transition to the SEC?
That's a fantastic question. I think that they had a very unrealistic view of things from a football perspective when right off the bat they won the East consecutive seasons. In fact, I remember living in Atlanta when they won the East the first year, and I reached out to a bunch of my friends and family, and I said, well, who's coming to town? Who needs a place to stay? Should we get a group together? And they said, no, we're just going to wait for the bowl game. You know, we could be going to the Cotton Bowl. And I went, wait a second. No, this is Atlanta's a big deal. You guys don't understand it and grasp it. And I think overall, football gave them a false sense of, I think, you know, how difficult things can be in this league. And it just so happened to coincide with the fact that basketball was at its worst that it's been in a long, long time. In fact, I made a comment when Frank Haith was the coach, and I called one of their first SEC games. And I said, you know, when Missouri entered the SEC, at the time, Tony Barbee was at Auburn, and they were really struggling. And Auburn, I think, had a 17-game losing streak, and Auburn took Missouri to overtime. And I said this on the air, and I got a lot of flack from the Missouri people within the basketball department. I said, when Missouri entered the SEC, they expected to go into overtime with the likes of Kentucky and Florida, not with the likes of Auburn. And given where Auburn was at the time, they took it a slap in the face, but as a Missouri fan, that's exactly what it should have been. I mean, this is a team throughout the throughout all of the 80s, and then throughout the mid-90s, they're used to being a top 20, sometimes a top 10 program, and make it to Elite Eights. And so there was great pride that when they entered this league, they would bring a great basketball tradition and following. But it coincided with a bunch of coaching moves and some NCAA probation, and they really haven't been able to provide that yet. We saw just a tiny glimpse of it I think last year, with all of the excitement around the recruiting class of Michael Porter Jr., but it never came to fruition.
They did get Kentucky out there out in Columbia last year. You've worked some Mizzou games this year. What, you know, Kentucky's obviously coming off one of its best performance of the season. So sometimes that can, you can get into regression facing a team that has struggled like Mizzou. So what could Mizzou do, if anything, that could cause problems for Kentucky?
Well, this might sound odd, but I think that the atmosphere is going to play a big role, and it could be a lack of atmosphere. And the only reason I say that right now, as of, you know, the time we're speaking, is Mother Nature. They're retiring Chivas' number. It's Kentucky. Typically, that's a big crowd, but it's tough to get big crowds into Columbia, Missouri at a midweek, especially with a big winter storm and ice coming through the entire state. So if there isn't a big crowd and Kentucky takes Missouri lightly, then they have some weapons. They've got some guys that can shoot it from outside, and Jeremiah Tillman is very talented on the interior that I think they could hang with Kentucky for a little bit. But if, you know, this Kentucky team is so talented, they roll in there and they know that they need to answer the bell early, I really do think they could put it on Missouri early. Jordan Geist has been the most consistent player for the Tigers, and he's had incredible improvement over his college career. Last year, he ended up with the ball late game situations in his hands almost by mistake, and it never really worked out. This year, he's demanding the ball. He's demanding it late in the shot clock. He's demanding it late in the game clock, and he's come up with some very big plays. He is a great example to kids watching, someone who gets every ounce out of his athletic ability. And when you watch the game and you watch the way Jordan Geist plays with the hustle and heart, I think it's a great example to people, no matter their talent level, that if you get the most out of what you have, you're going to be successful in life no matter what it is. But not just the way Kentucky's been playing lately, Tom, but who they are as a team as a whole. I really don't see them being challenged by Missouri.
Last 3 weeks of the regular season, and P.J. Washington is coming on strong. You think he's got a shot to win something like SEC Player of the Year, or is that already wrapped up for Grant Williams?
I think there's a crack. You know, there's a crack. And what we saw, a shortcoming of Grant on Saturday night, was that as great a player as he is, he does have a hard time against guys that have great size and athleticism. If you have just size, he can get around you. If you have just athleticism, he can outsmart you. But that was an issue for him and for that entire Tennessee team with their offensive doldrums in the second half. That being said, if you look at his consistency over the course of the season, Grant's only had two off games. I think he was in single digits against South Carolina maybe a week ago. And I know he scored, I think, 8 against Missouri last month. Otherwise, if you look at his performance and with some of the analytics, we pulled it out and compared it to Anthony Davis a couple weeks ago. I mean, in terms of his consistency, game in and game out, that's how those per ratings get so high when you do it every night. And that's the company he keeps as of right now. So I think Grant is still the favorite, but with at least one more head-to-head to go, and with the way Kentucky's playing right now, would not be surprised to see PJ establish himself in that conversation.
You've seen Kentucky firsthand over the course of the season. So give me a take on what's been most impressive about their evolution to where they are in this most recent game.
Well, I think they show a lot of different areas of strength. You know, for a while there, it was the defense and the ability to stop the ball, which they had a hard time doing early in the season, the emergence of Ashton Hagans as a premier defender. And as he has struggled, it has coincided, and I think he struggled both defensively and offensively over the last probably week to 10 days. It's somehow coincided with the reemergence of P.J. Washington as a reliable scorer and a dynamic player. So I think that they're a team that can beat you in a lot of different ways. And when you have that kind of versatility, it's tough to have a bad night overall. You may have a bad night in one area, but not overall. My main area of concern, though, is still the same. All that work that they put in to become an elite defensive team, and people talk about the lack of a goaltending call against LSU, and rightly so. But if the ball is stopped, if you get in front of the man with the ball and you stop that drive, it never gets to that point. And so that's still an area of concern that I would be worried about. And listen, when we're talking about Kentucky, we're judging them against, you know, national championship contenders and Final Four contenders, not just judging them against your average team. So obviously they're held to a higher standard in my eyes.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the same way for Kentucky fans, the way they expect it to be viewed as well. Cal says they're still working their way up the mountain. What do you think is left to tap into in terms of potential for improvement?
Wow, that's a great question. Because everywhere you want to see improvement, you've seen flashes of through the course of the season. Tyler Hero comes to mind. Reed Travis comes to mind. All these guys have had great games and great stretches. So I would think it just goes back to consistency, you know, and playing hard and playing throughout it. And it goes back to what we're talking about with PJ. You know, if he had this, we always had the ability, and I kind of compare it to Kevin Knox a little bit, because I remember that West Virginia game he had last year, and I thought watching the way Kevin Knox played against West Virginia, I thought, man, if this guy does it every game, he's going to be a 10-time All-Star. So it's the question of, can you do it every game? And we all have that. You know, if you go out and you play a round of golf and you pull one shot into the woods and then you tee the second one up and you hit it right down the fairway, you go, why didn't I do it the first time? It's not always easy to replicate, but you know you have it in you, so you have this drive to see it each and every time. So I would say, you know, continue to be an elite defensive team, and you have to do that every possession and get the ball to your stars. And what I mean by that is, while PJ has been fantastic, it's up to his teammates to get it to him in a position to score. And what I love about that is he's shown to be a willing passer out of the post. So if you're Tyler Hero, for example, and you're afraid that you haven't gotten a shot off in a little while, dump it in there. If he's doubled, you're going to get it back, and you're going to get a better shot. And I think that as Cal continues to preach that offensive consistency will continue to improve.
Tom Hart, thank you, sir.
All right, Tom, thanks for having me.
The word is maybe some ice tonight here in Columbia. So if Kentucky can hopefully get out of town before that hits, would be great. Back in 2014, it seemed like there was ice on about every road trip that season, including a trip to Missouri where Kentucky didn't actually get into the hotel until about 1 in the morning for a noon game and actually played one of the best games of the year. It's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. We'll be right back.
Can't get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at talkradio10.com. Now, back to the show.
Coming up on the halfway point, and just a minute or so left here, so we'll get with Larry Vaught coming up after the bottom of the hour break. Let me hit a couple of emails, if time permits, at least one of them here from Jim. He says, asked a question about, would college basketball be better by adopting some NBA rules, 4 quarters instead of 2 halves, 6 fouls instead of 5? I would say no, I don't want to see that. Those particular changes, too dramatic of changes for college basketball. I just like to see them do what the NFL does from time to time, is to tweak the rules or the emphasis in officiating to favor the offense, so that, for instance, on block charges, they make it really difficult for officials. They could make it a lot easier and make the game a lot better by for example, it should be the offense should get the benefit of the doubt in those situations. It should be really hard. It should have to be really obvious to get a charging call. Things like that that could favor the offense. Those are changes I'd like to see. We'll get more into that another time. Larry Vaught coming up next on the Leach.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Second half of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington, to the Kentucky Brandon Hotline to bring on Larry Vaught and talk a little bit about Kentucky basketball. And you can follow him at vaughtsviews.com and also read him at lex18.com. We'll start with the media session yesterday. Anything in particular that caught your ear from what Coach Payne had to say or Cal on the teleconference?
Well, I thought with Kenny it was kind of interesting to hear him talk about how important winning the SEC championship is to the players and how it would reemphasize Kentucky being the gold standard. You don't normally hear John talk a whole lot about what winning league championships or certainly winning a league tournament means. I thought hearing Kenny talk about that was kind of interesting. Then I also thought it was kind of fun. Well, I don't know if funny is the right word, but probably really honest when Kenny talked about that Ashton Hagans at times had pouted like other players sometimes do when asked why. They said just because something doesn't go the way, they just pout. And I think any parent, grandparent, or employer or anything would probably understand exactly what he's talking about. And I didn't really take that as a negative toward Ashton. It's just more of a human side of what goes on in college athletics that Kenny talked about. So those are probably the two things that jumped out at me the most, Tom.
Winning the SEC, I know something. There's some fans that when Cal downplays SEC titles or tournament titles, it gnaws at some Kentucky fans. I think he wants to win everything that there is to win. But yeah. I think he has kind of a mindset he wants to approach it with. But I think that probably there's a certain segment of fans that liked hearing Kenny say that yesterday.
Yeah, I agree, and I'm totally with you, Tom. I've never understood people that when they say that John's just more interested in getting players to the NBA than anything else. He's interested in going 40-0, sending 8 guys to the NBA, and then getting 8 more the next year that can go 40-0 and go to the NBA. He wants all of it. I think he just sometimes is kind of careful how he chooses his words and what he sets his priorities publicly, so that if you don't win a game, it doesn't derail and make your team think things are going down the tubes and all like that. But still, I think that was kind of reassuring for Kentucky fans to hear Kenny Payne say what he did.
Cal does a lot of work with video, really good motivationally. And I think we got a peek at that with the story he told. He actually told us on the pregame interview for Saturday, and then he shared it after the game as well about with Ashton Hagans. And, you know, they bring him in or bring the team in and get the video guys to put together 8 or 9 clips of Ashton at his best in the North Carolina game when he had 8 steals. And so that plays out on the video, and then Calipari says something to the effect of, you know, I don't know, you know, where that guy is, but if you see him, we sure could use him, that kind of thing. And, you know, kind of has a little fun with Ashton, and he got back to looking like his old self, I thought, on Saturday.
Yeah, because his defense had definitely slipped, and that's one thing you don't normally see. I mean, teams can figure out a guy's offense and ways to kind of slow him down and stop him and make him alter things there, but you don't expect a guy that was as dominant defensively as what Ashton was to kind of just, I wouldn't say fade away, but he just kind of quit really being a disruptor on defense, and he kind of got back to that a little bit more on Saturday against a really good point guard in Jordan Bone. In fact, I know a lot of people that tell me they think he has been the best point guard in the SEC, but Ashton really bothered him and disrupted him, and that's what they need. I mean, they certainly need PJ doing what he's doing, but they need Ashton out front just causing havoc, because the more he does that, the better everything about your defense becomes. And hopefully I kind of got him going again, because I think he'd hit a little bit of a lull there for, what, maybe 2 weeks or something like that, and they don't need that.
Back to what you were talking about with Kenny's comments, and it's just, I think it's natural when you're young and you're going through some things for the first time that you have to learn how to manage them or handle them. Ashton had a great run. Wasn't scoring a lot early in the year, and then had that run of 5 straight double-figure games. He got 23 when he went back home to Georgia, and all of a sudden it's just rolling, and he's getting nothing but love. And teams that come up on the schedule after that look at that and say, well, we got to figure out how to, you know, stop this. We're not going to let him beat us. You know, he's only making, you know, 15% of his threes. Let's just back off of him, and let's see what that does. And, you know, you saw teams essentially not guarding him. And the LSU was just dropping off of him and letting the guard, you know, his man roam around and be disruptive into the post. And you could see it, I thought, getting in Ashton's head. And when that something like that gets in your head, it can affect other parts of your game. And, you know, everybody goes through those kinds of situations. And I thought what he did the other night, and I saw this in the practices leading up to it, was he was just very decisive. He, if there's an opening, just attack. If they're not guarding you, go, you know, make them guard you, and then set things up, set up your teammates. Use that as an opportunity to get in there, because you get close enough to the basket, somebody will come over and guard you, and then you can create something for a teammate. And you just have to learn how to manage those things sometimes once you go through them.
That's exactly right. You can't stand out there and hold the ball and think about, well, should I take this three? Should I not take this three? And disrupt the flow of the offense. And you can't just start firing away from three-point range, because, as you said, there's a reason you're open. But what you can't do is just abandon what you have been doing before. I think I agree with you. He got a little stagnant, a little tentative on what he would do or what he would not do there. And he seemed to kind of get back over it. And they don't need him to score 15 points a game. If he can get 6 or 8 points and then do what he does on defense and rebounding and distribute the ball, then they are fine. And I think he just kind of has to accept that and get back to that. And it looked like he did the other night, and along with a lot of other guys on the team, played really, really well. But if Ashton can be that guy on defense for them, then I think they're really fine.
What's your take on E.J. Price leaving the football team?
I have learned over the last year and a half not to be surprised at anything that happens to E.J. I guess the only thing about this is this time it's kind of final, because he's had his ups and downs. And, again, that's one of the things I like, or almost I would guess admire, about Mark Stoops is the patience he has shown with guys at times when there's been some instances where I thought, man, why don't you just say enough's enough and let them go. And I think he's went out of his way to try to help EJ with maybe some issues that we all don't even understand everything to deal with, because he's obviously had a lot of issues throughout his whole athletic career. But it's kind of sad to see him go, but there comes a time where I would say just enough is enough, and I'm guessing Mark Stoops was probably to that point. Certainly hope hurts your depth going into next season, but the good news is you got Landon Young, and from all I'm hearing, he's going to come back better than ever. So you've got a pretty good guy to put right back in there where EJ was playing, so I think they'll be fine there.
Larry Vaught, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, Tom. See you.
As Larry, he's got a story up, by the way, at LEX18.com. I meant to get to. We did not about P.J. Washington in the Player of the Year race of the SEC. We'll maybe get into that next week. You can find that for Larry also at VaughtsViews.com. We are coming up on a break, about 18 away from the top of the hour. I'm in Columbia, Missouri, where the Cats play the Missouri Tigers tonight. Saturday was a big recruiting day for Kentucky in terms of a visitor. We'll talk about that with Evan Daniels of 24/7 Sports when we come right back on the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at Tom Leach KY.
Top of the hour, and back to the Kentucky Brandon Hotline. We bring on Evan Daniels from 24/7 Sports. Talk a little recruiting and talk a little bit about the current Cats as well. But we'll start with Evan, with Keon Brooks, who visited last weekend, and then reports were that he canceled a plan to go up and visit the Michigan State campus last weekend. Where do things stand with Mr. Brooks?
Yeah, what's up, Tom? Thanks for having me on, first off.
Thank you.
In terms of Keon Brooks, he took that unofficial to Kentucky, had planned to go to Michigan State too, ended up not taking it. I think he's zeroing in on a college choice. Is that going to be a week from now or 2 weeks from now or 3 weeks from now? Not quite sure. I'd expect it probably within some time in the next 2 weeks. But, you know, I've thought that about his recruitment before. I know that Indiana is heavily involved in this recruitment as well, and I'll be honest with you. I couldn't pick a favorite, but obviously it's favorable for Kentucky that they were able to get him back on campus for an unofficial visit.
Was there significance in not making the trip to Michigan State for you?
Not that I'm aware of. I'll be honest. I didn't know that he was even going to take that trip until they were saying it was canceled.
Has he done any interviews lately with respect to being asked about how things have gone south at Indiana?
Not that I'm aware of. I know that he did an interview with a colleague over 24/7 Sports, Brian Snow, but no, I haven't seen anything in regards to that.
Tell me a little bit about his...
Keep in mind that Indiana has a commitment from Trace Jackson Davis, who is an AAU teammate of his. Now, how that factors into this recruitment, I'm not sure. And he's obviously from Fort Wayne, Indiana. So there's certainly an Indiana draw there.
I think fans look at these situations sometimes, especially these guys that are going to be thinking anyway when they go in to the college game that they're only going to be there for a year. And I think fans look at it and think, why would you go somewhere where you don't have a chance to win a championship when you have the opportunity to go somewhere where you could, be that Kentucky, Duke, Carolina, whatever. But in your conversations with these guys, I would assume that not all of them are wired that way or motivated that way, right? They might want to go where they think they'll get a better chance to showcase their game individually, maybe, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think each recruitment, Tom, is different. And each player has things that pertain to them that are more important. Some it's location and proximity to home. Some it's strictly winning. Some it's strictly player development. Some it's a relationship with the head coach. Some it's a relationship with an assistant coach. Every situation is different, and no recruitment is the same. And that's why, I get asked about trends and reasons for kids committing certain places all the time. And it's funny to me because I just think that every situation is different. And there are certain things that come up a lot. I think proximity to home, wanting to play at the highest level, relationship with coach, those are probably the things that I hear the most. But you're right. These kids are all wired differently. And look, they don't care what a fan base thinks. And if, you know, they may think that they have a better chance of winning a national championship than wherever you or I think they may have a best chance of winning a national championship. So in no situation is the same.
You mean there would be kids that don't think like adults do?
There are plenty.
That never happens.
You remember when you were 17?
Exactly. Let's talk about Isaiah Todd.
I thought I knew everything when I was 17.
Let's talk about Isaiah Todd, a young man that might reclassify, and you have said recently in interviews that you think Kentucky's in a great position if he does.
Yeah, I do. I think that they're in prime position. Now, Kentucky hasn't offered him a scholarship yet. If they do, I think that they likely move to the top of his list. I think the competition for Kentucky, at least right now, is North Carolina. Now, he hasn't come out and said he's 100% going to reclassify. I think it's probably my expectation just from my reading the situation and seeing these type of deals in the past. But, yeah, I think Kentucky has put themselves in prime position, and I think Isaiah Todd is intrigued by what they have to offer.
There's another guy in the 2020 class, and I haven't seen any talk of him reclassifying, but I have seen talk about how good he is, and he's apparently visiting this weekend after scratching plans to come in last weekend. B.J. Boston, tell me about him.
Yeah, B.J. Boston is an awesome talent. This is a kid from Georgia, stands 6'6", long arms, thin frame, good athleticism, and one of the best scorers in the 2020 class. I think this kid is equipped to score it at all three levels. He can make long-range shots. He can create off the bounce and pull up from mid-range, and he can get all the way to the cup. Now, he's going to still need to get a little stronger. He can improve his ball handling. But, Tom, this is an elite prospect. I think we have him number 11 overall, and I think he has a lot of upside, and his best days are ahead of him. Now, this is one of those kids, Tom, that has taken quite a few visits early on in the process. You know, juniors were allowed this year to start taking official visits, and he's taken advantage of that.
Talk with Evan Daniels. It's at Evan Daniels on Twitter. You can see him at 24/7 Sports. Also, make sure to subscribe to the Sidelines podcast with Evan through iTunes. Talk to me a little bit about what you're seeing in
that.
The Kentucky.
Appreciate that plug.
Oh, you're welcome. The guys that you covered as high school players last season that found their way here to Kentucky, give me some of your impressions of how you've seen them develop through to this point in their first years of college.
Yeah, I would say that it probably took Ashton Hagans a little longer than I thought it would, but we're starting to see the guy that I always saw in high school. I thought coming out of high school, he was one of the most competitive players that I've ever covered, and I thought he was one of the better on-ball defenders, perimeter defenders that I've ever covered. And we're seeing that. You know, I'll never forget watching him. It was in Atlanta at the Lake Point facility in back-to-back games. And this was when he was still a junior. People forget that this kid reclassified up. Where back-to-back games, he guarded at seniors at the time, Romeo Langford and Emmanuel Quickley, and completely shut them down. So I think we're starting to see that come to fruition. Tyler Hero, who I think is maybe the most important piece to the Kentucky puzzle. You know, I think there's been a little bit of a misconception. He was a good shooter in high school, but he was always much more of a scorer. And I think we're seeing that on full display. This is a kid that can get to that mid-range area, pull up. Obviously, he can shoot it. But he's much more and always has been much more than just a shooter. And Keldon Johnson has been good. I would say that Keldon is probably shooting the ball better than I was expecting from long range. But this is a kid that's always been a competitor that's used his athletic ability, that's flashed. I think for the most part, those guys have played very well.
You said you think Tyler's the most important piece of the Kentucky puzzle moving forward. Why?
I just think that his scoring ability is a difference maker. I think the ability to get to the mid-range area and pull up, the ability to knock down shots. Look, this team needs guys that can make shots. Now, obviously, PJ's emergence has been massive, and you can obviously make a case that he is. He's certainly been their best player, especially as of late. But I think having a guy like Tyler that can make shots from all three levels and that competes the way he does and wants the big moment is key.
Evan Daniels, thanks, sir.
Appreciate you having me, man. Have a great day.
You too. It's Evan Daniels from 24/7 Sports, and he joins us on the Kentucky Branded Hotline. We're heading to our final break. We'll wrap up this edition of the Leach Report after this time. For our Tito's Vodka Race of the Week recap, we focused on Friday's show on the Grade 2 Risen Star down at the fairgrounds, and the big favorite, War of Will, overcame that 14 post position to win. So this is a serious Kentucky Derby threat, I think, for Mark Cassie, who's never won the Derby. From all reports, he is sky high on this horse's ability. They thought he was going to be a turf horse, and he finally ended up breaking his maiden on the dirt at Churchill late last fall, and it's kind of transformed him. So keep an eye on War of Will after a win. Got, a low 90s speed figure, so solid. Not spectacular, but solid, but came from just an awful post position and won seemingly pretty easily. So keep an eye on War of Will on the road to the Kentucky Derby. We'll have another Tito's Vodka Race of the Week coming up on Friday. Coming up tonight, it's Kentucky and Missouri here in Columbia. Mike Pratt and I will be on the call. Pregame with Buzz and Rex gets rolling at 7:30 Eastern time on many of these stations. And then tomorrow, Larry Vaught's going to host for me, so I'll be back with you on Thursday as we'll start looking ahead to a matchup at Rupp against the Auburn Tigers. But it's the Mizzou Tigers tonight. And I'm going to get off here and get to work prepping for that.
Thanks for listening to the Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at